This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Knowing Wheel. Yes, episode 86 and the final preview show we'll do for F1 in 2022. Yes, I can't believe it, Jamie. Abu Dhabi, it's come round so quickly, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, obviously the season ending like a month earlier than last year because of the World Cup probably makes a bit of a difference, but it's
definitely,
it seems to have flown by. It feels like 2 seconds since I was crying about Verstappen retiring in Bahrain.
It's felt like a weirdly quick year, hasn't it? It's been a bit strange.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, luckily, of course, this week, sometimes the preview shows can be a little bit quiet when there's not a lot to talk about. Luckily, Haas have come in and saved us this week, which we'll discuss in just a moment. But, of course, as always, there will be links down below to all of the sort of companies and products that we work with, as well, of course, Spotify. If you're listening to this on YouTube, you know, we just want to say a massive thank you for the support this year. But make sure you go give us a follow on Spotify as well for more Knowing Wheel, or exactly the same Knowing Wheel content. But you get the luxury of not looking at us as
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's
view.
Ideal.
It's probably well worth it. But, yeah, I mean, episode 80, I forgot what episode we're on already, Jamie.
86.
That is pretty good going this year. I think we've had quite a good run of form, and I think we've spoke behind the scenes. We've got some hopefully exciting plans that we're going to bring in the future. But let's get into it, though. Abu Dhabi, Jamie, you can celebrate. Just yes. This morning, Hulkenback is confirmed.
I'm very happy. I'm slightly, like, surprised. Certainly, if you told me this at the start of the year, it'd be like, why on earth has that happened? But
yeah,
you know what? He deserves another shot. He wasn't really given, like, Renault definitely unfairly treated him. He basically went toe-to-toe with Ricciardo until they told him he was out, and then he gave up.
Okay.
And then, yeah, obviously did amazingly well in the stints in 2020 with Racing Point.
Well, he retired from one and lost to Lance Stroll in the other.
Behave. He qualified third on the grid, which is higher than either Force India did, apart from
Perez.
Turkey.
I was going to say Perez, surely, finished. Yeah, well, Stroll got a pole. Perez was still third place that race, so both of their drivers did as well, if not better.
They were full-time drivers, having had the seat for a long time. Okay. But yeah, I do think he deserves another shot. And Haas is probably not the first place that I would choose, but you know what? It'll be fine.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
yeah, I'm very happy.
It's kind of a bit weird, isn't it? Because, of course, obviously, you're a big Hulkenberg fan. You always have been. You probably always will be. I've never been a Hulkenberg fan. The thing is, well, I don't think he's a bad driver, but sometimes I feel like he is slightly overhyped by some people. Jamie may or may not be
included
in that.
Who would that be?
Exactly. But it kind of, to me, as a neutral, at this moment in time, I would say Hulkenberg is a better driver than Mick Schumacher. But it kind of feels like Hulkenberg is a known quantity. We'll know he'll be quite good. Schumacher is not as good as him at the moment, but I still feel like he has the potential to have a higher ceiling. It just sort of feels like, looking into it from the outside, like there must be something else going on there as to why Haas don't want Mick next year.
I think that Mick is a bit like of a liability in terms of crashing a lot of the time, which genuinely I think that goes really far with a small team like Haas.
There are a couple of big ones at the start of the year, but since then I can't think of any major incidents.
Well, Japan, he was the only driver to make a crash.
Yeah.
But like in Saudi, they literally could have repaired the car because they had the parts, but they didn't want him racing and crashing it again. So they didn't let him race. Stuff like that. I think you basically, like, Hulk is definitely a safe pair of hands. And in the position they're in, where you probably get a better driver and you get someone who's going to crash less, I think that's basically ideal. And they probably don't. I mean, Hulk's probably a bit more expensive to pay, but not by a lot, I don't think.
this was going to be my next point, because of course one of the big reasons why Hülkenberg sort of stepped away from Formula One, wasn't it, was because no one was willing to pay him enough. I wonder just how much that price has come down so we could get an F1 gig again.
Yeah,
he must be a cheap date
nowadays.
He's had
a kid since then.
Yes, he has, hasn't he?
So maybe he just wants a reason to get a full-time job.
So I'm trying to think now. Haas are probably the first team in quite a while, actually, to have two dads as drivers.
Yeah, probably.
They really did go from two kids.
Did Raikkonen and Grosjean both have kids?
I can't imagine Grosjean did at the time. We're talking 10 years ago.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, someone surely can try and work that out.
Oh, Magnussen and Grosjean might have done.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, it probably was K-Mag and Grosjean 3 years ago. Haas just love their dads. Yeah. They've clearly got something else going on. But it's kind of strange, isn't it, when you think that obviously Haas over the last couple of years have really gone from just trying to get as much money in as they possibly can from a certain Russian to now really trying to go on the experience side of things. And it does seem like we're kind of seeing a bit of a shift, aren't we, at the moment. Whether, of course, it's been helped, you know, by Drive to Survive and the fact there is just a lot more money being poured into Formula One from the outside. Are we starting to see the potential of some paid drivers being eliminated a bit more?
Well, it certainly looks that way. Like you, at the start of the year, if you were to rank the 20 drivers as how good they were, you've probably got bottom five at least. You've got Latifi bottom and Schumacher's probably bottom three or four.
Yeah.
Like, both of those are gone. and they're being replaced by drivers who are, well, not paid drivers. They actually have earned their shot at F1 in one way or the other. It's probably 2023, in terms of average talent, is probably one of the highest it's ever been, really.
It's certainly getting there again, isn't it? It feels like. And I think, I mean, it's a good shift for the sport, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, in the perfect world, you have the 20 best drivers in the cars. Like, it's as simple as that. And of course, that sensibly will probably never happen with it, because there's always politics and money and everything else going around that does make it slightly impossible. But yeah, I think we're slowly potentially seeing a shift in the right direction. Now, obviously, we've discussed this in the past. We've got a lot of quite intense rivalries as we head into 2023 now, haven't we? You know, we've already spoke about Ocon and Gasly, potentially now Checo and Max as well. We've got, obviously, Haas now is going to be quite interesting as well. Am I forgetting any other obvious ones, Jamie, off the top of my head? Fernando and Stroll will end up being that within about 20 minutes of pre-season testing.
Yeah, the first meeting and Fernando meets Lawrence Stroll, he's just like, right, I'm going to end this kid's career.
pretty much. It is... We're going to head into, I think, quite a dramatic inner-team rivalry.
I reckon Tsunoda and De Vries will be the worst.
Really? See, I was thinking about this. I do wonder whether there could be some issues there.
Why? They're just... Neither of them are confrontational at all, I feel like.
Tsunoda can be.
He can be on the radio, but outside of that.
It's a bit strange for Yuki, isn't it? But I just wonder whether, you know, there might be a little bit of pressure within about who might get the potential of a Red Bull seat down the line.
Lando Norris will get it.
Probably, yeah. Lando Norris will snub on the field. What is it with Red Bull and trying to hire short people as their second driver? Like, Checo's not short, but Tsunoda, De Vries, Lando Norris are all sort of the ones.
Well, Checo is pretty short. He's bottom five, I think.
Is he? Checo's not that short.
No, he is. Watch the driver's height video.
Fair enough. But they all lied about that anyway. That was quite funny.
Yeah.
I guess the real sort of other question then, of course, is obviously Nico Hülkenberg next year. What does Mick Schumacher do now? Because there's kind of still all these rumblings and rumours, isn't there, about a potential Audi gig, but that's not going to be for quite a long time. Because Formula One, this Hülkenberg story is quite rare, to be honest. Like, it's very uncommon for someone to take basically 2 years out of the sport. Of course, it's been a bit lucky that he's been able to fill in. Did he leave at the end of 18?
End of 19.
End of 19, sorry, 2020, 2021, yeah, of course. It kind of... Just, like, Mick Schumacher, 3 years out of sport when you haven't had much to run on in the first place, is... Because, let's be fair, Nico Hülkenberg has kind of, he's actually been very, very clever in his branding of probably one of the best Formula One drivers to never get a podium, which kind of eliminates a lot of very, very good drivers that do get podiums.
Yeah.
But what can sort of Mick Schumacher do now that potentially allows him to get back into the sport in the future? Because that, of course, is what he'll be trying to think about.
I feel like the most obvious thing to do is try and get a reserve gig somewhere, because that kind of keeps you in the paddock.
Yeah.
You kind of saw that with Ocon and with De Vries. Like Ocon in the past and De Vries this year, really. He kind of is ready whenever there's a problem with someone to step in, and all you can do then is do a good job, which De Vries definitely did. I guess Ocon was a bit different because he was kind of unfortunately eliminated from the sport for a year, but was never really going to go anywhere. But yeah, I think Schumacher, it's tough on him. I do feel like it's slightly unfair, but he's also not been, he's had his chances, and like, I think the nail in the coffin was qualifying last in Brazil when your teammate gets pole.
I don't think that really had any effect on it, to be honest.
No.
It kind of, to me, seemed like the decision had already been made down at Haas. But
yeah,
I mean,
potentially.
Does he try and sort of push himself back towards Ferrari? You know, again, I've mentioned before. You know, obviously we're seeing LMDH becoming sort of potentially the next big thing. And, you know, we could see some Formula One drivers, or sort of people around Formula One trying to go there. Could we end up just seeing him at Formula E? Something like that? Because let's be fair, it was never going to be easy for Mick Schumacher, was it? Because obviously he was going to come into sport and be compared to his dad.
Yeah.
I think the harsh reality is, looking at it right now, of the current 2021 grid, I'd argue he's probably the second worst driver there. He's only really better than Nicholas Latifi. Zhou Guanyu had some real flashes of brilliance this year.
Yeah.
And I'll give you credit where it's due. He's been better than I think any of us expected this year. He really has been able to swim when a lot of us thought he would sink.
He's really, like, I wouldn't say he's been as good as Bottas, but he's not been far off a lot of the season.
In the second half of the year, he's certainly been there or thereabouts most weekends. It's not been something that we've spoke about. Oh, Zhou Guanyu is a long way off Bottas here today, of course, with the exception of Mexico qualifying. It's sort of the only big one I can think of in recent times. But yeah, it's just been difficult for Mick, of course, because last year was kind of an unknown quantity. You never really could compare him to anyone. But this year has, because let's be fair, K-Mag is not exactly a world beater. He's a decent driver, he's not some next level talent. That he's not,
it's
like
not
a
Fernando,
like
going
Alonso
against George
or something
Russell.
Like that. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Mick's got to try and, I think he's got to keep racing somewhere, whether it is Formula E or Le Mans or World Endurance, that sort of thing. But I think he's got to try and stay close to a Ferrari, or, you know, there's been rumblings about talking to Mercedes, or whether he just really tries to play the long game and heads off to Audi, does some Le Mans stuff with them, and then tries to get back in that way. I'm sure there'll be decisions being made. Yeah, he's got
another
a lot of options, but none of them fill him with confidence.
Another option, of course, would be just to try and sabotage Logan Sargeant's car this weekend.
Yeah.
Because if Sargeant somehow doesn't get the super license points, there's a vacancy at Williams, which he's probably the prime candidate for.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I mean, you could even, let's be fair, like, this is just hypotheticals again. If Sargeant didn't get that seat, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a push to try and get Drogovic there for a year.
Who? Drogovic is still Ferrari, isn't he?
No.
Oh, Drogovic. I was thinking.
Who were you thinking of?
Schwartzman. Wrong driver. Yeah, I could see that, especially with kind of Mercedes links with both teams.
Yeah.
Obviously, Williams moving more towards anyone they can find, really.
Well, this has been the weird thing, hasn't it? Because this year, we've gone from Williams still fairly being quite a Mercedes, not really as much anymore, but still having fairly close ties with Mercedes. Then we kind of wondered during the halfway stage of the year whether they just become a bit of a Red Bull junior team, potentially looking at Red Bull powertrains in the future. Then it looked like they were going to become an Alpine B team, with Oscar Piastri meant to be going there. And there's still the occasional talk, of course, if Sargeant doesn't get the seat, whether they could try and push Jack Doohan into that car.
Yeah.
Really has been weird and wonderful this year. They certainly have. But Yeah, it's a tough call for Mick Schumacher, isn't it? But it kind of... Again, this has always been the thing with Mick Schumacher as well, isn't it? That we haven't mentioned today. He's not a driver that adapts particularly quickly. You know, no. He probably would have been a lot better in next year's Haas car if it wasn't wildly different. But you don't stay in Formula 1 for very long if you can't get into a car and get up to speed quite quickly.
Yeah, and that's always in the defining... Like, all the great drivers can step into anything and get the best out of it.
Yeah. And Mick Schumacher, bless him, has not really been that driver, unfortunately, with Haas. No. In a way that Kevin Magnussen, despite having a year out, has been able
and
to.
And Nico Hülkenberg has demonstrated he can be as well.
Yes. Yeah, I there's a tiny part of me there that really wants to see you eat your words next year. but, yeah, it's a tough old saga. But fair play, Hülkenberg. You know, I'm genuinely excited to see how he gets on against K-Mag next year. And
he's going to beat K-Mag. I'm calling it right now.
You're saying it right now, are you? I think when we do some preview shows in the new year about the teams, things like that, then we'll definitely...
There'll be some outrageous claims from me.
There's going to be some bold claims coming from the pair of us, isn't there? Let's talk Abu Dhabi then, Jamie. There's still a lot of things to play for this weekend, isn't there? We have kind of gone through this a couple of times already, but I've decided this week we're going to make it into a proper competition for Abu Dhabi. Of course, because our predictions league has gone out the window. Sorry,
I won it about four races ago.
You won it by about Monaco, but okay. we've got what, four predictions? So we add one extra one in there. We'll add one extra one in. Just quickly. So we've got five predictions. I'm going to do Fernando versus Ocon.
Okay.
Down at Alpine. We've got...
Nice to get a championship up here.
Right, I can run you through the points if you like. Or I can run you through the gaps.
It's all good.
We've got five different things here between now and the end of the year. But now and Monday that are left to be decided.
Sunday evening,
really, yeah. Of course, the big one that even F1 is still hyping up is Checo versus Charles Leclerc. 290 points apiece. Technically, George Russell could still beat them both, and I really would love to see that happen because it would be hilarious. 290 points apiece. George Russell is on 265, so he'd need fastest lap and race victory and neither of them to score. Which
now Perez can get 1 point. Surely.
No, he's won two races this year, and he's probably up more
P2s. Russell would have won two.
He's had more P2s, surely.
Has he?
Surely. George has only had one P2 this year, I think. Checo's really? Definitely had more P2s. You get those championship standings up.
Yeah, yeah. Checo has had, like, six P2s.
Yeah, there's no way George
yeah.
bested
yeah.
that. What? Who are we saying? Out of those
two.
Three, technically two.
I reckon... I want to say Charles Leclerc.
You want to say Charles Leclerc. Are you going to say Charles Leclerc?
It would be unbelievably Ferrari to finish third when you're battling for the championship, apparently.
Hey, what? Sorry, we're talking about who finishes P2. So you're
I know, but I want Leclerc to do it, otherwise he'll just be depressed.
Oh, right, sorry, I get you.
Because it would be terrible to finish third in a two-horse race. When at one point you had a 50-point lead or whatever it was.
I think it was 42 points or something, wasn't it? Or 37 after they left Australia. Which is
so I'll go Leclerc.
Scary.
Yeah, also, Perez has now not got Max on his side, apparently.
I thought they were good mates again.
Oh, yeah, maybe they are. But I also watched back the Monaco crash. That was absolutely deliberate, and I don't care.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced. so you're saying Charles Leclerc?
Yes.
Therefore, I'm going to say Sergio Perez.
Interesting.
Mercedes versus Ferrari. 19 points between them. Of course, Mercedes... We kind of looked at it before Brazil, didn't we? A 40-point gap in two races is impossible. Mercedes have taken 21 points out of them, but that was massively helped by a sprint race.
And a 1-2 finish, which probably won't happen again.
A 1-2 finish. But also, we've got to remember the fact that Red Bull were way off the pace as well, which helped Ferrari massively. Do we think Mercedes can overhaul 19 points and Ferrari could finish third again in a two-horse race?
I don't think so. I'll back Ferrari again for this.
I think Mercedes will outscore them in Abu Dhabi, but outscoring them by 19 points is very... Because, I mean, even Ferrari, if I'm sure there's plenty... I'm sure Matteo Binotto sits down and listens to Knowing Wheel each week. Just get those two cars home and you will finish P2.
Because if you finish fifth and sixth, say. That's what, 18 points.
Yeah.
Mercedes then got a score like 30,
first and fourth.
37.
Yeah, first and fourth.
Yeah.
Which they can't because... Oh, wait, no, impossible. You're finishing fifth and sixth, yeah. I'm not convinced, though. I'm not convinced.
I think Ferrari will get that.
Ferrari should do it, shouldn't they? The other one, Alpine versus McLaren. Again, 19 points there, but we're in midfield territory.
Yeah, I definitely think Alpine will secure that.
They should have locked that
out. It was a shame for McLaren because Lando was doing really well in Brazil.
Well, Lando's locked out P7 in the Drivers' Championship. He's guaranteed it. He's done really well this year.
Lando probably could have got a top six in Brazil if his car hadn't broken down.
He was looking good, yeah. And that would have brought the gap down.
Makes a big difference.
Well, obviously that would have been 8 points for him and Alpine would have probably lost out on a few. So the gap would probably be less than 10, which still I'd probably back Alpine, but...
Yeah, but it's a bit more of a chance. Yeah. They're saying this, back in 2020, McLaren were 20 points off Racing Point and then finished fourth and fifth in Abu Dhabi.
But 2020 didn't have quite a clearly defined top three teams like we do now.
No, definitely not.
You just had a top three drivers.
Well, Albon finished fourth that race.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He did.
Yeah, the first race all season, he was serious.
He got a podium before that.
Yeah, when 12 drivers finished.
Well, yeah. One that I think has kind of gone a bit quietly under the radar, because it kind of doesn't really matter much at all. I mean, none of these really matter a huge amount, apart from the teams ones. 6 points between Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz.
I think Hamilton will secure that.
Yeah? Do you reckon he'll out-finish Sainz, or do you reckon he'll just have a big enough points gap going in?
I think if Sainz does beat Hamilton, it'll be for like fourth and fifth or fifth and sixth.
Yeah, he's rather Sainz than isn't going to win
first and second. Yeah, no.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
So yeah,
so you're going to say Hamilton that one. I'm going to agree with you once again. And yeah, Esteban Ocon versus Fernando Alonso. I think there's 5 points between them.
5 points. I'll go. As much as it pains me, I'll have to back Ocon.
You're going to back annoyingly.
Ocon because Alonso definitely deserves it.
Yeah, I'm actually going to disagree with you. I reckon Alonso is going to do the most Alonso-esque kind of thing.
He'll take out Ocon at turn one and then finish seventh.
He'll finish seventh and Ocon will finish 11th or something. And he'll egg him out by 1 point and then we'll never hear the end of it.
Yeah, when he's lost out on 50 points this season, according to him.
Well, he's lost out on about 200, hasn't he? He'd still be in the championship fight if things had gone his way. So... It is what it is. So, I mean, a lot of them we agree with there, but we're going different on Checo versus Charles, and we're going different on Alonso versus Ocon, which
indeed
gives us a little bit of spice heading into Abu Dhabi.
And speaking of spice, we've got one more of my quizzes for you to do.
Oh, here we go.
And speaking of the battle for second in the championship, since the turn of the century, there have been 12 drivers to finish runner-up in the Formula 1 World Championship.
Okay.
You should do quite well at this. You've got a minute to name all 12. Go.
Okay. Bottas, Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Nico Rosberg, Sebastian Vettel, Felipe Massa, Sebastian Vettel. I've already said that. Yep. I'm just trying to go back through the years. No, I've already said Alonso. Jenson Button.
Yep.
Rubens Barrichello. Kimi Raikkonen. Michael Schumacher.
Yep.
David Coulthard, I think, did 1 year.
Yep.
How many more have I got to get?
One more.
Oh, no.
20 seconds.
20 seconds to get one more. Mika Hakkinen.
Yes.
Yes!
You actually did a quiz.
It's taken me all year, but I did well on a quiz for once. I'll take that. I will absolutely take that in my stride. You're genuinely impressed with me there. You can't hide it too much, Jamie. I've done well.
I am slight. I mean, you know all the drivers. I reckon I could have done that. But,
yeah, but you made the quiz. Of course you could do that. I'm genuinely like, I'm speechless now. I'm so happy I managed to get all of those. I thought there was going to be one thing I noticed
isn't in the notes, but we probably should mention. It's Sebastian Vettel's last race.
It's Sebastian Vettel's last race. It's Mick Schumacher's last race. It's Daniel Ricciardo's last race. I mean, the other one we probably should mention, but quite possibly can't say much on still, is the ongoing questions about Mattia Binotto.
Oh, Fred Vasseur.
Fred Vasseur, my guy. I love a bit of Fred. I don't think I've met Fred.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah. I'm going to try. Yeah,
he's an absolute legend.
He's a goat.
Worryingly for him, I don't think Ferrari will suit him very much. But yeah, we'll see.
See, I don't know. Like, don't get me wrong, I really like Fred at Alfa Romeo. I think it's a good fit for him.
Yeah,
but I also think we kind of only really get to see one side of him a lot of the time, where he's at Alfa Romeo. Of course, he's a Formula One team boss. He's got a serious side as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I do wonder whether it's kind of one of those odd things where I wonder whether he could be exactly what Ferrari need, but don't realise.
Yeah, I guess Arifa Bene was really passionate and fiery, which I think Fred Vasseur could be.
Are you telling me Mattia Binotto is not passionate and fiery when I've met him?
Definitely not. Have you met Mattia Binotto?
Yeah.
When?
Silverstone. I congratulated him for the win. And that was...
Oh,
then
yeah.
He said thanks, walked off and told Charles Leclerc off less than 2 minutes later. So I always think I was the last person he spoke to and he was livid at the time.
Yeah. And then Van Dijk aired you, didn't he?
No, Van Dijk... Because I told Van Dijk to run faster, which apparently is what he's known for in the Premier League, is not being able to run that fast or something.
Yeah.
But it was because he'd hurt himself. But yeah, no, I spoke to Virgil van Dijk as well that day. I actually spoke to him twice, I think, that day. So it was a weird time in my life, but we'll
very
take
weird,
it.
Very.
And Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah, you can probably defend better than him, so.
Probably. Yeah, I think... And again, I think the other big talking point, isn't it, of course, with all this, is the underlying rumour that apparently Charles Leclerc and Mattia Binotto's relationship has fallen apart. Now, yeah. Again, that's more speculation, but it would not surprise me.
Leclerc's radios as the season have gone on have got more and more just upset.
And his interviews.
Yeah. And, like, the putting him on inters in the dry when everyone else is on dry tyres was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's.
I think we often say, like, oh, when a driver's been at Ferrari 4 or 5 years, they start just losing the will to live. That's kind of happening with
Leclerc. This has been 3 years, hasn't it, now?
Yeah.
Four seasons.
This is the end of his fourth, yeah.
Yeah. So Charles Leclerc's got 1 year left at Ferrari. Then he's. I think this is the thing, isn't it? Because, of course, Ferrari have put all their eggs in the Charles Leclerc basket. Like, he is their future.
Yeah.
But it's looking more and more like, rather than it being the Michael Schumacher future they banked on, it's looking more and more like the Sebastian Vettel or Fernando Alonso future. But then it's kind of that weird thing as well, of course, which I guess we kind of said about Seb at Red Bull 10 years ago. Where could I see Charles Leclerc going?
I could see him potentially as a Hamilton replacement.
They've got George Russell for that.
They do, but...
Hamilton's replacement is already at Mercedes alongside him.
Yeah, true. I think the number two, they'll get someone like Gasly, who you know is not going to... Like sort of like a Bottas character, where they're solid, they're very decent, but they're not going to ruffle the feathers.
Yeah, rustle the feathers.
Rustle the feathers, exactly. That was shocking. Yeah, I don't know. Leclerc's just stuck in Ferrari, which probably means he'll be out of the sport in 3 years' time.
Probably
because he'll just quit and be like, "I'm out. See you later."
It's kind of that thing. Unless he could like take a big gamble going like Audi or something like that in the future, if Audi came in and were strong. But there's plenty of questions, isn't there, for the future of Formula One. But luckily, of course, after this weekend, we've got 3 months to ramble about, or 4 months even, isn't it, to ramble about all this as well. Is it weird that I'm kind of looking forward to all our off-season podcast shenanigans?
Well, we just talk absolute rubbish, don't we?
It's great fun. It is great. If you're still fairly new to No One Wheel, or you weren't here last winter, we go through so many rabbit holes, it's incredible.
We started talking about the 1994 F1 season in great detail.
We did. Last thing though, Jamie, for the final time this year, Abu Dhabi predictions. What are we saying? Pole position, top three. We scored one point between us last week. Let's see if we can do better this
time. 2 points for correct, 1 point for getting them on the podium, but in the wrong place.
Yep. We might have to change. Actually, are we a fan of that point system? Because you hated it at the start of the year.
I like it because I've won, but exactly. I think I would have won either way.
Yeah, probably.
Max Verstappen.
Okay.
On pole position. Max Verstappen to win the race.
Okay.
And then do loads of donuts.
Yep.
Second place, Charles Leclerc.
Okay, yeah.
Third place, Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
That's very boring, I know.
It's not that boring. It's quite boring.
Yeah.
I am going to... You know what? It's final race of the year. I'm already out of it. I'm going to regret this.
Kevin Magnussen on pole.
No, I'm not saying K-Mag again. I am going to say... Max Verstappen pole. Lewis Hamilton race victory.
Oh, dear.
I'm clutching at straws.
I can't be bothered with Twitter after that.
I'm going to say Hamilton race victory. I'm going to say... Sergio Perez P2, Verstappen third.
That's the most wild. In what case would Perez be ahead of Verstappen?
Because he's gonna give him back the place from last week, and defend from Charles
Leclerc. All will be forgotten.
Exactly, exactly. That's my bold beg of a claim to finish off the year.
The fairy tale of Abu Dhabi.
I am. I was about to say it's going to be redemption from last year, but it's absolutely not going to cover the redemption from last year.
No, it would. I reckon there'll be a late safety car, and then they'll just give Hamilton a race win.
They'll let Hamilton lap everyone. Oh, I can't. I can't believe this season's coming to an end.
It's come around fast. Abu Dhabi's actually a good circuit now since the change.
Well, it wasn't that great last year.
No, it was. It was a much improved.
It was improved,
before.
But it still wasn't that great.
It was, yeah. I enjoyed it. Plenty of overtaking.
I'm sure
spots.
You did enjoy it. I'm sure you
like
did.
Like into turn
I
five on the last lap.
Yeah. Don't remind me. It's a week of not spending much time on
social media.
Championship
can only be
media.
One by one.
Oh, stop. I'm gonna cut the podcast there, before things get rowdy. Thank you all so much for listening, as always. We will be back, of course, next Tuesday with the Abu Dhabi post-weekend show. And then, yeah, after that, we'll be actually able to sit back and relax a little bit more, Jamie. Back to one show a week.
The World Cup.
Watch the World Cup as well. I'm sure there'll be brief discussions about that. It's definitely not coming home. actually, speaking of, have you seen Samuel Eto'o's predictions for the World Cup this year?
No.
They are incredible. Apparently, he believes it's going to be Ghana versus... I think it's Ghana versus Morocco in the finals or something mad like
right.
that. So look out for that one. I think that's the weirdest way we've ever finished a F1 podcast before.
Yeah,
but
Samuel Eto'o's not got a shout-out before in his podcast.
No, he certainly hasn't, but now he has. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will return very, very soon with more Knowing Wheel.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.